Hello, welcome to episode 24 of the Waterfowl Podcast, the Green Antler Waterfowl Podcast out of Tassis, British Columbia. My name is Sarah Fowler, and I am here today with someone I met from the Youth Climate Forum on May 8th. That was for all Vancouver Island youth who were really concerned about the climate and, you know, policy and how we could set goals for 2030. And I'm pleased to introduce Colin Sparks of Machozen. So say hello to all our listeners, Colin, if you can.
Hello.
Hi. So we have talked about a lot of things since the forum, you know, maybe a month ago now, and there was a lot of goal setting from that. I know that the group that we were in, we were talking about infrastructure, and we were talking about food security, and we were talking about climate, and, you know, it was a lot about getting companies to sort of do their own cleanup. That was something that I remember from the Youth Forum, but also it was a sort of about regular greenhouse gas emissions and reductions and carbon sequestration. So I'd like you to tell me a little bit about what you think is the, you know, goal that you're going to set for 2030.
Well, I'd like to see, you know, every single bit of overforest and huge biodiversity areas protected, because we need every bit we can to sequester as much carbon as possible to try to reduce the effects of climate change. And logging these few pockets left just for a few jobs for a few months is just stupid.
Yeah, it's really short-sighted. I mean, it takes 200 to thousands of years for these trees to get to this level where they can sequester the carbon. I know that one of the other things I do for the Village of Tassis, I sit on the Watershed Society that's here, the Nookasound Watershed Society, and I've learned from the biologists there that young trees, like from maybe, you know, seedlings to 13 years, they are sort of susceptible to browsing, drought. They're really thirsty. So a lot of the cases where there's like an entire hillside with young trees, they're just sort of drinking the river out. And I've heard out of Seattle, they have these stats about half the river. So 50% of the water volume coming down the river is being sort of absorbed by the trees because they're putting on their mass, right? It's like, that makes sense to me. And it makes sense too, on the other side of the spectrum, the older trees, they don't drink as much, right? And they also are the ones that take a lot of carbon out of the atmosphere. The younger trees, when they're babies, they're just focused on growing, you know, they're not really focused on like breathing too deeply or, you know, sort of doing that. One of the things that I've learned in municipal government is that we call that natural assets. So like municipal natural asset inventories is something that I've learned. And we here in Tassis have an old growth watershed that is called McKelvey Watershed. And we've been able to have it placed in a reserve by the logging company. And that was, we had to get every single person in town to sign a petition to that effect. But I worry that our success is Fairy Creek's failure, where because we've been able to save our watershed, now that means they got to cut somewhere, is what they would say. And I understand, sort of, I try to understand all points of view, and I clearly have a bias because I want, you know, to have, you know, oxygen for people to breathe. I know that, you know, the people who are in Victoria protesting, chaining themselves to statues, the people who are, you know, sitting in those flying tree squad, you know, bravo for them. That's a scary thing to sit in a tree and go, I guess my fear of heights is showing, but the idea that people are like putting themselves in harm's way and trying to draw attention to the fact that these are the sort of last ones that they have, right? That this is the closest old growth habitat to their homes, right? Or to the high to the larger population.
And these companies, because we need all the force we can get, and yeah, you can dry carbon literally out of the air. These big machines, and I know there's one in Squamish, but like, what about all the biodiversity and animals and nature stuff that go to there as like refugees? Because there's a force all around that's being destroyed. Like, you're really only thinking like 2 feet in front of you. You need to be thinking many years down the line. Like, we need these areas for making other trees be able to grow around them and to be able to log them as well. Like, you need these big veteran forests to be able to help and protect other things too.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I'd heard recently was the concept of mother trees, that there's these or nurse logs, right? You know, one tree falls in the forest and we clean it up because it's a fire hazard or whatever. It's fuel that's just left there to, you know, sponge up some water or, I guess could be fuel for fires. And when I go to the forest here, which is all around us, at least that's how I see it. I know that it's technically in the tree farm license area, but I see it as a forest. I see it as a habitat. And so that's my bias showing. But I know that it's more than the sum of its parts, right? It's not just the carbon sequestration or the timber value or the land value. It's, like you said, the habitat and the sort of, like, the delicate web of different creatures that get together there.
And it's just the sheer beauty of seeing trees, like, bigger than a lot of those houses in the West Shore. It's just mind-boggling and relaxing going out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of the natives who live out there don't want it because of the livelihoods. They go in there to, like, relax, maybe take some cedar bark for baskets or something like that. It's just, they go out there to even relax and spiritually. Like, that's their kind of, like, come away from home. And just having it gone is just disrespecting the natives as well.
Yeah. Well, this is another big part of, you know, whose land is it anyways, right? Like, that's the, I know that before there was Canada, there was people harvesting cedar and weaving it into baskets, and that is maybe somewhat of an art form that we need to revive, or, you know, like, have that kind of respect for, like, okay, tree, can I just take a little bit of this cedar and sort of have a relationship with this tree, and that you come back to every year and you harvest, you know, a few strips off of each one so that you're not damaging it so far that it can't heal, right?
Yeah, and a comment on, like, the beauty of these old growth forests. We actually have one decent-sized cedar tree on my property here. It's 3.6 feet in diameter at chest height.
Oh.
And it's right outside my window, so I always like looking at it when I'm stressed. And that it's just such a nice thing to look at.
It's your safe place.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so nice. I remember, too, when I lived in Parksville, there was a tree in the back of the RV that we lived in, and I would watch the woodpeckers because that they would just, like, sit there, and I could be in my house in sort of like a blind, right? I mean, it's a trailer, so it's very much like a blind, parked up into the forest. And yeah, just to watch them work and do their harvesting where they, you know, it's like this with the cedar branches, right? Like, we're not going to take every bug in this tree because we need to leave some seeded for, like, some eggs to hatch for tomorrow's meal, right? You know, and I don't know if that's how a woodpecker thinks, but it definitely, with the, like, older trees being windbreaks or, you know, sort of sheltering areas. When I was planting trees in Kelowna, one of the specs of the contract, so that means the specs, the sort of terms that you had to do, so they wanted us to plant the trees within a hand's distance from a stump. So that says to me, oh, a tree once grew here, that means a tree can grow here again, right? So you were trying to, like, use the root system of the dead harvested tree, the stump, to shelter this new sapling. Yeah. And that's, you know, we all sort of have our role models and our people who nurture us and help us learn about the things that we're interested in. And I don't know, trees definitely are safe places. I used to climb trees a lot more when I was younger, but I don't really do that much these days.
Yeah, I don't climb trees because the risk of falling and breaking a limb.
Yeah, well, I had recently somebody come to my house and cut down a tree that was close to my house. It was on my neighbor's property, but it would have fallen on my house. So I was glad to have it go. But it was a habitat of sorts because I would see the squirrels come and get the seeds and throw the pine cones down on the deck and then come and get the pine cones and then go on the fence and like take all the chuff and just eat the seeds out and then climb back up the tree and put all the seeds that they had in their cheeks into their little storage area that they had up there. And so by cutting this tree so that it wouldn't fall on my house, I took the squirrel's house, I guess.
We need like a complete ban on all the damage to really sensitive ecosystems that don't grow for us right away. We can't have a plan that's going to take 2 years because what's left will probably be gone by then.
Yeah, well, that's part of it. I mean, when you get down to the end of the...
the line.
Yeah, or the, you know, the bottom of the jar, right? You know, like sometimes there's just no more peanut butter you can't scrape out of the bottom. And I think you're right. This is a really pressing circumstance, you know, like, but it's also been going, like, people have been organizing, to sort of protect these habitats and these forests for a long time. There's the history of the War in the Woods and Tofino and now with Fairy Creek. And, you know, there's always been sort of this live for today so you can live for tomorrow. And that's maybe the industry's thought is that we need to feed the mills. We need to, you know, build houses for people. We need to have resources which to do that. We need to have jobs, right?
We shouldn't be having jobs that are like destroying the climate when we're supposed to be moving away from that kind of a thing.
Yeah, but it's always up for discussion. I know that no one thinks that climate change is a myth anymore, and we all know that forest floods and fires are connected with, you know, our everyday lives, right? Like how we heat our homes, how we get around places, you know. All these things are somewhat connected to our survival, and it's coming to, I know that with Greta Thunberg and the sort of Fridays for Future and the climate, I mean the, what do they call that? The Extinction Rebellion. I know that, you know, the rubber's been hitting the road for some time. Like I'm, you know, been involved in some sort of like environmental movement for my entire adult life, you know, but I don't know that we've made a lot of, I mean, obviously we have some wins, right? Like with McKelvey, we were able to protect a watershed and get it in the reserve, but it's still, it's like the king saying, oh, well, you want not to be taxed. Okay. Well, I guess we'll put this, we won't cut this tree. We'll put this in the reserve, but it's some, then your neighbor will have to suffer. Right. So there's, somebody has to pay and somebody has to, I've had a lot of discussions with the logging companies over the last little 3 years that I've been involved. And I remember even before I was elected, the logging company came to talk about logging in our area, whether it's behind my house or in the watershed, and how every year that those trees grow, they get more valuable in that sense. And so we don't really measure the amount of carbon they sequester. We don't really measure the, you know, value of habitat. We segment it off into these little sections where it's like, oh, well, it's the elk habitat for this time of year, or it's this, you know, bird, the marbled murrelet, the species at risk. That's, you know, that's the one that lives here and has been living here, like the squirrel in my, you know, my own personal story. And so we have to sort of like put needs above other needs, right?
Yeah, because like the scientists think like there's a 95% chance we get past 2 degrees, and past that point, the effects just get so bad, it just causes like worldwide extinction for everything, even humans.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like we truly aren't thinking a few feet down the road. We're only thinking in front of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and this is like what creates that? How do we know what comes next? Right? Like the idea of learning to, you know, crawl before you can run I would like to have better strategic thinking and policies that are, you know, future proof in the sense that, you know, being involved with the climate, the Vancouver climate worker group goal setting leaders has been really helpful, and to think about 2030 and 2035 and 2050 is, you know, it's part fantasy, part, you know, A to Z all the way through. You know, there's going to be steps here and there, but a lot of the time why we're just thinking, you know, two steps ahead or just one step ahead is because that's maybe what we're capable of, you know? Like, I don't know that... Is it a lack of imagination that we can't imagine the future? I know that you definitely probably wouldn't have a lack of imagination because you're not sort of broken down by the world, but there's definitely a lot of people who, you know, myself, I guess, is this middle-aged person who wants to, you know, try to give my kids the same life that my parents gave me with a nice house, picket fence, all that kind of, like, you know, material wealth, I guess. And, you know, the cost of that, right, is making some of the same choices that maybe we should know better by now.
Because that's just like a green roof, grass roof, maybe bringing agriculture on the roof to make more local food, because having all the greenery on the roof reduces the temperature in the city, so you don't have those huge deadly heat waves come right through, and then ending up like having your own huge heat bubble, and then to bring some of the biodiversity back into cities.
Yeah, well, and that's true, because there's definitely sort of the concrete jungle analogy, right, where the concrete and the heat, I know that people in France have been monitoring how many people die of heat in the summertime because it's all paved, right, and I know in Toronto too, there's like the rivers have went underground now because they've paved over them, and part of like the sort of new landscape design is that we're making room for the rivers, and we're planning, you know, these like routes for things to be funneled. I don't know, bioswales is one of the words I've heard about it, where there's trying to bring natural environments into sort of urban centers. And I know that they do a lot of sort of food growing on roofs, or like I think a lot about the Coombs goats on the roof, you know, because that's an old idea, but it still works.
That's more of an extreme event example, so.
Yeah. Well, and that example is one that it's like, we've taken something that is like, I'm sure that building with the green roof and the goats on it, yes, it has to be maintained more maybe because it has like, you know, water coming down, and it like, we just put a new roof on my house, a metal roof. You know, we didn't get solar panels. We didn't get a green roof. We got the roof that's not going to leak because it was previously leaky. So there's definitely like pluses and minuses, I guess. And the thing that I think about that goats on the roof is that is using the sort of novelty to be iconic and to, like, I don't think that they grow food up there unless they're eating those goats, but there's definitely the idea that that's usable space, right?
Like, even painting it white reduces air temperature, like a lot of tropical cities, and
mm-hmm.
like rain gardens could be like a, like sort of a kind of more of a cheaper kind of an example to get into, because now you can use it to like drain storm water, now you get bring some of the nature to the city.
Yeah, well, and there, you know, maybe was lakes before they were cities, right?
Yeah, and like hospitals that have like greenery around them, like example, like the Victoria's one, the general one that has like the triangle in the middle of it with forest net. Apparently, rooms that are facing a lot of greenery, people recover faster because they just feel happier being in the greenery.
Yeah, I can believe that. I can believe that, you know, we heal in more than one way, right? Okay. Yeah. Well, it's been really good talking to you today, Colin. I'm grateful for every minute you've given me, and you tell me a lot of things that I didn't know about. And I sort of... We're getting to 20 minutes on this recording. I think that I'm going to wind it down. I'm going to ask you to sort of... If you could ask, you know, your provincial government to have, you know... This is Colin's goal. This is, like, what you want for... the next 10 years, what would you ask your province to do? One thing.
I would think of a very aggressive plan, like just listen to the scientists and make the best plan, at even any cost, to just try to save the planet that we all live on.
Yeah. Well, and that's a, it's aggressive plan. We need an aggressive plan because we have been aggressively sort of paving it over and chopping it down for, you know, give or take 100 years.
Yeah, I wrote an article in the Machosa newspaper a few months ago on kicking the can down the road, our gloomy future of doom.
Oh, tell me more. Kick that can down the road, our gloomy future of doom. That seems like a good noir story.
It was in the January Post for 2021.
Oh, awesome. I'm going to have to check it out.
Page 11.
Way to go. You're a writer. Well, I'm going to extend an invitation. If you have, I'm sure you have a copy of it still. I do a book. I've done three of them so far. I started doing it in 2018. And so it's a book that I've collected works. It's the Tassis Inlet Outlet Revival Anthology. So I collect people's work, poems, and just bits of my kid's grandma, she gave me some of these books or these poetry books, and inside of them there was like typewritten poem about stumps, and that was sort of the catalyst that started me doing this collection of works. And so I'd love to publish your work, even though it's not the Machosa newspaper. It's a book of expression. And it's, you know, an expression of all sorts, so it's open to a lot of different things. But the thing that started it all was a poem by my kid's great-grandma called Stumps, and it has a lot of old language, and it's, you know, a manila kind of paper with a typewriter, and I really have such love for sort of these old ways, right? Yeah, I think about how we used to get everywhere by horse-drawn buggy. So that was, you know, to me, as a gardener, creating manure, right? You know, and just like, but then you had to like worry about feeding your horse, right? So we all have fuel and we all need sort of like to get a little sun on our gloomy futures. I don't want you to give up hope, because we're really going to... It takes all everybody to work together, and sometimes telling scary stories is what helps us to make better decisions.
Huh.
Yeah. Thanks for writing into the newspaper. I can't wait to read your work. Page 11.
To the link.
Oh, that'd be great. And I do hope that all the people who've been arrested for the Fairy Creek are able to, you know, have legal defense and support. I know that they're doing a favor for a lot of us.
Yeah. A lot of people don't even know it yet. They're stuck in the device.
Yeah, well, that's like how we learn about things, right? Like, sitting here in my kitchen, that's how I'm learning about the person chaining themselves up in the legislature onto like the sign or to the statue, right? Like being on my device is helping me be educated about what other people are doing.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
Any last thoughts?
No.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your time, Colin. I'm really grateful to you and your input and your, you know, ideas about how we can have an aggressive plan to protect ourselves and our loved ones, you know, everything that we love, you know, like it's not just the squirrels and the birds. It's also, you know, our friends and our family and our very survival.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay, I'm going to stop the recording. Maybe. Oh, I don't know. Is it still recording? No. 25 minutes and 25 seconds. Wow, that's the longest episode I've done.
It still felt so short.
It's
your short, I know, calls.
Yeah, well, we can talk.